Hi, everybody. It's Chris. I'm here with Jason and Trisha.
Hey.
And we just finished recording Monday's episode of Outrageous, where we run down everything you need to know, everything you want to know about the election. So please join us for that. But in the meantime, check out part 3 of episode 18, where Trisha talks about financial gurus and how we should punish them. That's right, isn't it?
Yeah,
exactly.
But as you listen to us talk about financial guru, imagine that they're polling gurus.
Okay, so now you've confused the issue.
Time warp. Well, we just went through a time warp. We're stuck between this when we recorded each episode.
So you'll listen to it, and while you're listening to what Trisha says, think about for weirdly polling gurus. You'll find out more why that's so funny to us. Anyway,
have fun.
All right, let's move on. Trisha.
So this is a quick topic that I've been thinking about. I say quick and then you never know, but.
I was going to say, it never works out.
Yes.
Never works out.
Oh my God.
I
just rolled my eyes when you said quick. I was like, here we go.
So I've been listening to this book called Pound Foolish by Helene Holland. And it's Pound Foolish, Exposing the Dark Side of the Personal Finance Industry. And it's about 10 hours. I've got like about 40 minutes left. And the main contention of the book is that as a result of the Great Depression, an industry popped up that was really essentially started to try to educate Americans about personal finance. But what we've now ended up with is a monster. We have a monster industry where people don't actually realize that the people who are the biggest names in the industry that have been kind of recognized as possibly being helpful are actually not helpful at all. They're kind of engaged in dubious and even maybe like deceitful practices that the consumer isn't fully aware of because they have accepted these people into their lives as financial gurus. And a perfect example is like a Suze Orman.
I was about to say.
I was thinking Jim Cramer. As soon as you start talking about
name like, all of them, right? So she has a whole like hour on Suze Orman, and it's vicious.
So it's Suze or Susie?
It's actually Suze. That's how she pronounces it. She pronounces it Suze in the Suze. But I was like, I've always said Susie, but you know, Suze Orman. But anyway, so it got me thinking about that industry in general and sort of how it cropped up, why we give it so much weight. And how there are no consequences for the people who give advice out to consumers. And that in some ways, it actually has become kind of a substitute for the American public to hold politicians or people who they should hold accountable. Because the personal finance industry is exactly what it says. It's personal finance. You're personally responsible for your own wealth.
Are you proposing something or are you just going to like...
I feel like
sitting this idea for a while.
You want to round them up? Round them up.
Well, no, what I'm wondering.
This is the latest group to round up.
No, no, but you know what I'm wondering is, I mean, you know how like Elizabeth Warren, they brought the CEO, but Wells Fargo is part of that industry.
Sure.
Because it's no longer just banking, it's personal finance and personal investment. You know, they're kind of like running roughshod. My question is, what are we to do about that? Not like media literacy. You know, media literacy is actually one of those things where we say to ourselves, the media is doing a particularly heinous job. We as educators are going to give you the tools to deconstruct it. If you look up financial literacy is actually taught to you by the people who are destroying you. So that, you know, they're sponsored by banks. They're sponsored. So you don't have any protection.
Yeah, so I this is a tough issue. You know,
it
I like
is,
to have
right?
package solutions.
I know.
No, it really is a tough issue, and I hope you'll post a link to what you're talking about because I would really like to consume that because I think that is right. That so we have this. I'm going to think out loud for a second. We have this very complex financial market, global financial market. It's very complex. Yep. And the vast majority of us, myself certainly included, have only the most superficial understanding of what it's all about. And, you know, the system has been designed, and we've said this before on the podcast, you know, it's designed to let a small group of people and groups play to try to amass, you know, more wealth than others and as much wealth as they can. If we have a conversation about, well, a lot of people being left out of that, the response from the industry and the supporters of the industry and the beneficiaries of the industry is, well, everyone should go get their own piece. And if everyone just participated, if they had the financial literacy and just participated, then everybody would be fine. And like, that just clearly seems to not be true. And if you just think about it, it's not true, because you have individuals, families, corporations that have hundreds of years of experience and wealth already built up. It's the whole, you know, they have the cumulative effect. So for me, who, you know, was not born into wealth and I'm trying to enter that world, my parents didn't educate me about it because they don't know about it. I don't have capital to play in it. To think that I'm going to be able to, you know, utilize the instruments that they all use, the financial instruments to amass all this wealth, like, I'm just not equipped. And I always say this, like, you know, I've got two master's degrees and I don't know what my mortgage documents mean. Like, I'm signing a bunch of papers. I don't know what the hell I'm signing.
right. You're just hoping for the best. Right?
I'm a pretty educated guy. Like, think about all the people that haven't had the, you know, benefits that I've had to get that education. So I'm just like, I don't know. I'm maybe just reiterating what you're saying. I don't know the answer. I mean, I guess the answer is the Elizabeth Warren Consumer Protection Bureau. Like, it's political action. It's like, we need to have, you know, fair stakes. We need the wealth that is accumulated on the backs of other people. Like, we need checks and balances for that. And some of that wealth needs to be distributed, but it's tough. And like, last thing I'll say, you know, this financial, so, you know, in my work in education, a lot of the banks, you know, they have, I don't even understand this part, but they have certain requirements that they have to expend a certain amount of money to help the community. And what they all love to do is financial literacy because, you know, it's self-serving, right? It's like, well, they get to say they're helping the community build wealth, but they're also attracting the community to come open bank accounts with them so they can make money off of them.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, I've always, whenever I would meet with banks, they'd always be like, when can we come do a workshop? And I'd always be like, how about you just donate money to us so we can use that? and, you know, some banks did, not much, but it's a big issue. I don't know the answer. I feel like I'm constantly on the, you know, edge of going broke. I barely understand this stuff.
Well, I feel like it's a dark space that we have not attended to. Like, people can offer advice that leads to bankruptcy and there's no consequence for them offering the advice. You go to a doctor and a doctor takes you down a particular road. I mean, yeah, you might be able to sue them, you know, whatever. But there, I mean, these people, they are empowered to sort of act without any regard for whether it's truthful or not.
Okay. And yet somehow you say that financial literacy is not the answer.
Financial literacy is not the answer because it's not coming from the people you want. It's schools don't have the ability to do it. They don't have the resources. So what they generally do is they outsource it. But what you'll find is your financial literacy packet has been put together by Wells Fargo or it's been put together by Bank of America.
Yeah, every time.
So there's no one deconstructing that industry.
Yeah.
And its products.
This is not going to answer your question. It only is going to make it worse. But I mean, the part of the problem. So I think about like that, what is it? Like the coal company, like Massey, like they had that coal mine blow up. And what they found afterwards is like, they had all these violations. Like, they had been cited so many times and they just didn't do anything to correct it. So like, we knew that this was unsafe. The regulators knew. They had cited them. But at the end of the day, we have certain companies that are so powerful. They have so much money that it's like they go without being held accountable. And banks, and now like we've had all these banks, you know, merge. We've got these behemoth banks. And like, you know, they get, even with Wells Fargo, right? They got fined like some, you know, 0.00001% of their annual revenue. I mean, that's not factual, but like something really like some crazy tiny number.
There's no consequence. I was just
I know, because they can lobby their way out of it. That's the problem.
Shouldn't we have like a police force for economics?
What?
White collar crime?
What?
Federal police force for economics.
I mean, for white collar crime. Like, if you aggressively pursued and basically doled out zero down home mortgages that you knew were shitty, cost people their savings, and there are no consequences. That just seems strange.
But that's like part of the game, isn't it? Isn't the econosphere not built on, but takes into account that this is one of the ways to make money in capitalism, is to be a huckster?
Like, that's the question.
It's not socially acceptable, but it's economically acceptable. I mean, certainly the system endorses it.
But you know, what was interesting to me though, and this is why this topic became intriguing, is because I wondered at the lack of debunking of many of Trump's successes, financial successes. And then I wondered if in debunking Trump, you wouldn't debunk many things.
Okay. Can you say more about that? I'm a little confused.
In many ways, the advice that people are giving you is built around you using a product. Take my class and you'll figure out what you need to buy these CDs. But these CDs are the best ones. And guess what? Here they are. I'm going to tell you about them. And you buy them. And the person who's recommending the CDs explicitly was paid by the CD creator to recommend them to you. Mm-hmm. So it's like this sort of massive Ponzi scheme that you, the ordinary citizen, cannot win.
So who's protecting the citizen?
Exactly. That's the question I wanted. I mean, I see Elizabeth Warren go at people all the time. But similar to the cops, I'm like, where do they go? Where do you go when you've exploited a citizen and you've told them that this is the route to paying off their loans or this is the thing, and then you've encouraged them to buy the CD or whatever it is that you've done, and there are no consequences for it. I mean, I think that's why you end up with a Trump. I mean, look, I mean, he has built his wealth off of basically perfecting the system. And now, you know what I mean?
It goes back to the conversation we were having about, I mean, it goes back to what you said, Chris, that, you know, in order for the killing to stop, police need to start going to jail. I hear experts say this a lot about the financial system, that executives are not going to stop doing, you know, these shady things until they start going to jail. And so far, no one goes to jail. The company gets fined. The company pays the fine. It's not a big fine for them. And then it's just not a strong enough consequence. There's no deterrence. So, yeah, people need to start going to jail. But I don't know how to make that happen. It's like with the police. I don't know how to make that happen. It's not happening. I don't know what to do.
This seems even more – this seems
it's hard more, to it's more insidious.
The police because
it's more insidious.
I think that – again, I'm going to rest back on the fact that the system allows this. Like, and the way I feel about systems is that we need to dismantle them to fix problems, but I really don't know how to begin dismantling this one.
Well, you know, it's a modern invention. It's a modern invention. New system. It's a 1940 post-1940 system, really.
Which system exactly are you talking about?
The sort of personal finance, revenue, you know, advice, personal banking.
Yeah, but there's only
global markets.
Someone telling people what to do with their money. There's always been snake oil salesmen asking people to invest in X, Y, and Z and preying upon people's lack of knowledge about financial systems. I think what you're talking about, Tricia, in the 40s and stuff, I think it took it to a new height because it got mass marketed, which is dangerous. But I'm not certain it wasn't always there.
It just reminds me of your media conversation.
Yeah.
You know, who's responsible in this space? See, Jason, I think you'll enjoy it because a reviewer said it best, that really what Elaine reveals is that it's not really about personal finance. By couching things in the language of personal finance, it really takes it out of policies.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I've never heard it articulated that way, but that actually makes a lot of sense to me because it's the illusion of empowerment.
Yep.
So you don't need to change policy if you've been empowered. Like, well, I can take advantage of this system. Okay, I don't need the policy to change. I just need to learn how to take advantage of it. That's really the message, and that's an illusion.
Yeah, and I think that's why this has struck me so much because I feel like it's something that not everyone sees. Like, I don't think it's something that we all know that the wool has been pulled over our eyes about this. Mm-hmm. And so we don't even actually know how to attack it. We don't have to say, I mean, you can actually say, no, this is a policy in a bank. You can't have this policy. You can go and attack. You can vote for the right person who's mm-hmm. going to introduce new legislation that says this is not, you can't do this. But no, what's really happened is the entire industry has colluded into making you feel like the only reason why this isn't working is because you're not smart enough and you're not making the right choices.
You know what? But guess what? I mean, I'm trying to think this through. I mean, people love casinos. And
what?
Here's my point. I think everyone knows that casinos are rigged so that it's extremely unlikely that you're going to win.
But not everybody knows that.
Maybe not. But people go and they'll go and they'll lose and they'll go and they'll lose. But that mirage, right? That oasis out there that like I'm going to hit one day and it's going to make it all worth it. Like they keep going back. I'm amazed at this. Like in Maryland, we've just seen all these casinos pop up and they're just bringing in so much money.
No, but this is besides the point. Like,
no, I don't think it is. No, let me just finish. So let me tie it back. So the point is, I'm just thinking through like, well, why is it hard to get to organize people against this? Because the messages they're getting is that even though most people may not ultimately benefit, there's still a chance. There's still that person or that group of people that made it big, and people want to shout at that.
Fine, but I think what Trisha's underlying is that there's an entire class of people who's preys upon other people. So yeah. it's like if you were at the casino and there was someone there who was like urging you to gamble and telling you, well, like statistics show that people yeah. win this much yeah. money and yeah. da, 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 da. That's really different than you just rolling the dice and being like, I've heard of the stock market thing. I can't wait to try it out. That's someone saying, this is the stock you should buy because it's going to make you rich. When the whole time they know it's going to bankrupt you like yeah. 5 years from now. And I think I've been quiet during the segment because I've really been trying to think this through. I don't know enough about economics. None of us do.
And that's the point, right?
The truth is I know a lot about a lot of stuff, but when it comes to like economics, I really fall down. Like I have like maybe a sixth or eighth grade education when it comes to like how these things work. But that's your point, right? I'm the average person in this regard. So, I mean, I don't even know what we can do because I feel like making it illegal, making that class of people illegal, making Suze Orman or Jim Cramer, making them illegal doesn't really make sense the way that we do things. Like that's not quite that. It's just consumer protection. Like Ralph Nader, this is what he does. Like we have to disseminate, we've got to ring another bell to let people know that that's not the way. I mean, this is one of the problems with living in a free society. You can't shut these people up. The only thing you can do is, sorry to say it, Trish, you got to educate people.
But I don't want to lose sight of the policy side of this because
there's a big policy.
Because this is the thing: the financial markets are designed, and increasingly for a small group of people to benefit enormously, and that's what we've seen. That's what we've seen since the recession. Is that like? Yeah, the economy is getting better in the aggregate, but that's largely because a small group of people are making a ton of money. And they've concentrated wealth even more. So I think there's a policy side to this. And what frustrates me is that ideally, you know, most of us are not benefiting greatly from this system. And so it would be in our interest collectively to, I mean, you know, what this comes down to is – the answer to me really is like, well, I mean, this doesn't solve the preying on people, but just in terms of like wealth actually being distributed more equitably, like that's really about tax policy.
Yep.
And that's what we should be advocating for is a progressive tax policy instead of a regressive one, like the one that we have, which everyone agrees it's regressive, but yet we don't change it. But that's really where we need to go. But the challenge is that, again, like the message people hear is that this financial system, like you individual person who has very little capital and don't really know the system, can benefit from this and can become wealthy from this. And it's just not true. Anyway, maybe I'm agreeing with you, Chris. Maybe it is education, but it's not just education. Like it's education towards policy change.
Yeah, because that's, see, I'm at the end, and I think what I've kind of emerged out of this realizing is that this is why people vote against their best interest, Chris. You've always asked, we talk about this often, and I guess I was having this conversation with my sister. Why do people vote against their best interest? I think within this arena, the money arena, people don't recognize on some level that government policy can actually ameliorate some of the challenges that they have in their lives. A lot of people really come down on the idea that it's their personal failures, their personal foibles that have made them experience financial difficulties. You know, it's that extra latte, or it's this, it's my extravagant lifestyle or whatever. But what they don't realize sometimes is that some of the policy choices that are being made in terms of employers or what have you, those can have direct impact. We have an entire industry working against people's best interests and propagating the notion that your place on the poverty wealth scale is entirely based on you. Until you unmask that, you actually can't empower the citizenry to demand things of their government.
Okay.
Where was that legislator? Was it from North Carolina who said black people are racist because they hate white people because white people have been successful and they haven't? And if they would just actually work hard, they would be just as successful as white people. Like,
okay, I fell asleep in the middle of that racist tirade.
But it's not even just white supremacy. It's just like, you know, you're poor because of your choices.
Right, right. Yeah, that was a racial way to express it, but there's a much larger, said to all of us to some extent.
Let's close this down and move on to media recommendations, which is something that you've seen, heard, or experienced that you think other people should see, hear, or experience. I hear Jason's got a good one, so let's start with him.
Now, you're right. It's something many of our listeners may have already seen, but it's not 5 years old. I saw Deadpool over the weekend.
Oh, my God. You just saw Deadpool?
Damn. Hey, that was only like 9 months ago.
Come on. 9 months ago.
I thought it was fantastic. I'm very glad to have seen it, and I highly recommend 14? It. I thought it was great.
Okay.
That's my recommendation.
Trisha, did you see Deadpool?
You know what? You made a you had a conversation point piece about this a couple, many, many podcasts.
I think it was my anti-recommendation when it actually came out.
Is that true? I didn't remember that.
I mean, Deadpool was fine, but I mean, if I'm 13 and I still think fart jokes are appropriate for the classroom, but otherwise, whatever. I'm a grown man, so it was. I thrilled about it.
Wow, you just keep going.
Oh my god.
Okay, all right. I thrilled over it because comic book wise, it was really great in a lot of ways, but also not for nothing. I think I'm completely done with Ryan Reynolds.
I didn't even know you started anything with him.
I know.
Well, I mean, it was a really slow period, right?
Dating for a while, then we broke up. I think I'm just done with him. Like his whole smug Van Wilder thing, I just don't care about it anymore.
But that's one of the things I liked about Deadpool. The character of Ryan Reynolds, not just Deadpool, was made fun of. I mean, he named himself in it. Like, I like that. Yeah. I thought that's what
Himself for making a bad Green Lantern movie. Cause I was like, yes, bitch, movie was terrible. Oh,
that was awful. Oh, God.
All right. So yes, my anti recommendation is now Jason's today recommendation.
Sounds great. Very efficient.
Trisha's
going to give a neutral recommendation.
So my recommendation is the one that was my topic. I actually love this book. I'm listening to it and it's great. So it's Pound Foolish by Helaine, and that's Helaine. Am I pronouncing it right, Christopher? Because you know how I do with the Jamaican accent. Helaine Olin.
You're doing the best you can.
I do. All Jamaicans very like generous. To give that H when it doesn't need to be there. Anywho, and I also want to, I have another recommendation that's fantastic, and it's a podcast, and it's freaking ridiculous, and I told a couple friends, and they love it. I'm recommending podcasts on my podcast, but it's damn good. Mm-hmm. I've been listening to Politically Reactive, and it is the best thing I've listened to in a long, long, long time. It's great. two comedians, an African-American and an Indian man.
Indian comedian. Heard, like, the ads or whatever.
Yes.
I heard about this.
Take a listen. Take a listen. And, you know, if you want to take a real dive, I would recommend that you listen to their episode with, it's interesting, with Sean. I think his name is Sean King. Is that the controversial Black Lives Matter personality? Talking about Colin Kaepernick. They had an offline conversation about Colin Kaepernick's own evolution in his ideas. Mm-hmm. So that was interesting to hear. It was interesting to hear the reading that Kaepernick had been doing, the questions that he had been asking offline, and then when he made his pitch to go on one knee, and where that came from. So that was a really good one. So you can start there, and then if you love it, go backwards or go forwards. It's really great.
Cool. Okay. My recommendation is going to be a show on the OWN network. That's Oprah Winfrey's failing network.
No, I think that's doing well. Tyler Perry saved that network.
Oh, God. That's not a statement anyone wants to hear. The show is called Queen Sugar. And
oh,
it's about
these, you're watching it?
Yeah. It's about these three siblings in Louisiana. Who are united when their father passes away. Spoiler alert. I'm going to say that before the spoiler. Spoiler alert, the dad dies.
I just spoiled it. I think that's what you said.
They come together to take care of his farm and deal with the land. I haven't gotten too far into the series, but it's fun. I like it. It's drama. It's all Black people. Great acting. Very handsome actors. I would say check it out. I'm here for it. I'm here for it. I'm two episodes in or three episodes in, and I like it so far. It's really great. So I think other people should check it out.
Cool.
Nice.
Yes. And that is it, people. This has been a tremendous amount of fun. I think we covered a lot of ground. I think we've changed a lot of hearts and minds. Our final sponsor has been Consequences. This podcast is brought to you by Severe and Everlasting Consequences. That's all we talked about tonight, huh?
Yeah.
People getting their just desserts, people getting exactly what they deserve. All right, everybody. Until next time.
See ya.
Bye.
Bye.
Wow. Treasure, could you be any more?
Bye.
Bye. Fuck you.
Bye, everybody.